The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 4 podcast.
Yeah, we've made it to the final hour. We appreciate you making time for us, and we are really looking forward to Stuart Mandel. He's done his annual list of the best coaches in college football. If you haven't heard us talking about it, I'll zip through this list as fast as humanly possible for you folks on radio. Nick Saban, number one, followed by Dabo, Brian Kelly, three, Lincoln Riley, four, Ryan Day, five, Kirby at six, Jimbo at seven, Coach O, eight, Mullen, nine, Matt Campbell, 10, Luke Fickell, Pat Fitzgerald, Jeff Monken, Paul Chris, Kyle Whittingham, Bill Clark of UAB at 16, Franklin, James Franklin at 17, P.J. Fleck, Mario Cristobal, Hugh Freeze at 20, Kirk Ferentz, Lance Leopold at 22, David Shaw, Kiffin at 24, and Tom Allen at 25. A very interesting poll. It's great to have Stuart here. Stuart, listen, the first one or two, I'm sure not very difficult, but as we say hello to you, let's take us through your process. How do you put this thing together?
Well, thanks, Paul. You know, as I say in the article every year, it's not that I ignore a coach's whole career, but it really is about who the top 25 coaches are today. And so it's pretty heavily weighted toward recent performance. You look at, for instance, Brian Kelly. Earlier in his tenure at Notre Dame, nobody would have been putting him on the top 25 coaches list, much less in the top three. But since 2017, this is a, and you think back to the last 25 years of Notre Dame football and how irrelevant they had become. And now they're a program that is winning 10, 11, 12 games a year, has been in the playoff two of the last 3 years. Handed Clemson its first regular season loss in 3 years. Just truly remarkable the job he's doing right now. And so he's moved up quite a bit in this list. And then conversely, somebody like James Franklin, who I've had very high for many years, going back to what he did at Vanderbilt. But that program's taken a big step back in the last couple of years. And so I dropped him quite a bit this year.
You have some really interesting names on there. I was pleased to see Bill Clark on there from UAB. He's a coach that we all know how great a job he's done, but he doesn't get national recognition. Kiffin's on there. Hugh Freeze. I'm interested in your thoughts on three that are really well known in their own circles, and Kiffin a little bit better known than most. But take us through your thought process, especially on Bill Clark.
Yeah, I frankly don't understand why Bill Clark doesn't get more recognition. He doesn't even make the cut on my colleague Bruce Feldman's top 25 list. I guess maybe people at this point don't remember exactly what happened at UAB, that it was literally shut down and he had to rebuild it from scratch. And so, you know, at the time, I'm sure you and others there thought, well, it's going to take them years to get back up and be competitive. And instead, from day one, he's been taking them to bowl games and they've won the conference two of the last 3 years. I know it's a conference that probably, you know, nobody's paying attention to outside of their own fans, but, you know, I certainly consider him, you know, I have other group of five or, you know, I know Army's not technically group of five, but, you know, Jeff Monken on here and guys like that, I think he ranks right up there with the top group of five coaches. Hugh Freeze, just if you didn't believe it already when he was at Ole Miss, has just shown what a great offensive coach he is. I mean, Liberty has only been in the FBS for a few years, and last year they go 10-1. They beat an undefeated Coastal Carolina team in the bowl game, and people weren't entirely surprised by it. And I think that's just because they know what a good coach he was, and that you know, given regardless of what happened off the field, you know, on the field, this is a guy who whose offense was so ahead of the curve that it basically caused Nick Saban to rethink his own offensive philosophy. He's attributed that many times to Hugh Freeze. And Kiffin, I almost put him on there last year. I mean, he again, much like Bill Clark, won two Conference USA titles in 3 years. He gets to Ole Miss. They weren't great last year, but they immediately became a top 10 offense nationally, put a heck of a scare into Alabama, and then beat a top 10 Indiana team in the bowl game. So he has really reinvented his career. He was, frankly, an underachieving coach earlier in his career. And I think that he's now performing like the coach that people thought he would a long time ago.
You had Matt Campbell of Iowa State 10, and he's a coach that you always, I think he just agreed to a new deal, but he is one of these rising coaches that's always mentioned for other jobs. Did he move up considerably in your list, or has he been in that position?
Well, it's one of those things where I look back and I'm embarrassed at how low I had him the year before. I only had him number 25. So, yes, he moved up quite a bit to top 10. And, I mean, Iowa State football, it has one of the worst histories of any Power Five program. And they went to the Fiesta Bowl. They finished number 10 in the country last year. It's the best season they've ever had. And you started to see the seeds of it. It's kind of an old-fashioned, you know, kind of slow rebuild that began 3 or 4 years ago. If you remember, they beat Baker Mayfield in Oklahoma when they were in the top five. It just came out of nowhere. And they've been building ever since then. I think, you know, he's a great coach. Everybody does wonder, like, is he going to jump to some big job this year or next year? And maybe he eventually does, but I do not think he's, you know, there's certain coaches that from the minute they have that first success, they're looking for the next job. And he does not strike me as somebody like that.
If you read The Athletic, Stewart does have the rankings. You have Pat Fitzgerald on there, and I mean, he's just one of these coaches that comes around every 2 or 3 years and shocks us all, and then he moves back a little bit. How do you characterize someone like that?
They had a really weird season 2 years ago that threw us all off the trail, myself included, where they just didn't have a quarterback, and they were terrible 2 years ago. They get a new offensive coordinator. He brings in a new offensive coordinator and a grad transfer in Peyton Ramsey, and that last year was the best Northwestern team he's had yet. They finished in the top 10. They had a great defense. They're probably going to have two first-round picks off of it. And so sometimes you get a little in the weeds and you forget to take a step back and look, and it's like, wow, Northwestern since 2015 has finished in the top 25 four times and has, you know, been in the Big Ten title game two of the last 3 years. And, you know, given that program's history, that's a remarkable run that he's on.
Now, I didn't I'll look again. Did I see Jim Harbaugh's name on your list?
I'm a little bit ahead of the curve on that one. I haven't had him in there since. To me, the moment he lost me was 62-39. That was the Michigan-Ohio State game at the end of 2018 where they just totally laid an egg. And I didn't have him in that list the next year, and that seemed pretty controversial. And then I didn't have him last year, and that was remotely controversial. And, Paul, it's weird. I haven't gotten any emails today asking where he is.
I think most people have forgotten him. And one more name before I get to your reaction. David Shaw, what, 5 years ago was considered among the top five coaches in the country. I'm not saying he isn't a good coach, but how do you explain what has happened to his program?
You know, it's funny. They did bounce back a little bit this past season, but nobody noticed because the Pac-12 season was like happening on another planet by the time they finally got back to the field. You know, he had a great run of three Pac-12 titles in his first 4 years there, and they were a national top 10 team, but they've definitely slid from that perch. I think, you know, there's several reasons, but one I point to immediately is he had tremendous staff continuity there for a long time, and there's been a lot more turnover recently. And some of it's kind of behind-the-scenes stuff that people that follow college football may not even notice this is happening, but for instance, they had the same strength coach since Jim Harbaugh's first day there, and he had a little bit of a scandal, and he got fired a couple years ago, and that has an effect on a program like that that, you know, doesn't have that much margin to error to begin with. Stanford had recruits from a very small pool. It's frankly pretty remarkable the amount of NFL players they put out from there. Davis Mills, their quarterback, is now expected to be, I believe, like a second or third round quarterback this year, but they just don't have as much margin for error, so I think they've come back to earth a little bit the last couple of years. They haven't had a Christian McCaffrey or a Bryce Love type superstar like he had in the past. But it was encouraging the way they finished last year.
Stuart Mandel with us from The Athletic. Stuart, you've been doing this a while, and I know you do it based on what you see and your evaluations. You also get a lot of reaction, I presume. And I am curious, where has most of the reaction come from?
Well, it appears that, at least based on the comments and the tweets, that the one that people have the most problem with is Brian Kelly at number three. I can't say I'm surprised. I know he's, first of all, he's the coach of Notre Dame, so I mean, he could have five national titles and people would still say he's overrated. And he's kind of a polarizing coach, so I get that. I just think, you know, what people most get on him in Notre Dame about, right, is the blowout losses to Clemson, or to Alabama last year, to Clemson the year in the playoff the year before that. And it's like, well, if that's going to be the standard, then we might as well just end the list at two, because there is nobody under here. You know, there's nobody else who has been regularly beating Alabama or Clemson. I have Jimbo Fisher at number seven. Jimbo Fisher, I believe, has lost nine straight to those teams. So if you can look past that and just recognize that that's an impossible standard, I mean, what the guy has done at Notre Dame hasn't been done in 25 years. And I think it's a lot harder for Notre Dame in 2021 than it was 30 when Lou Holtz was there, or certainly generations of coaches before that. Everybody's on national TV every week, not just Notre Dame. They have no central recruiting backyard like teams in the South do. And they're still going to the playoff and winning 10, 11 games a year. So I think he deserves that credit. I get why it's a bit polarizing. I certainly debated having Lincoln Riley there, or even maybe Ryan Day there. But that was about it. I couldn't have seen him ranking any lower than that.
Stuart, I know there are some really tough calls to make.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
I would think, and I'm curious, who was close to making this list that just got left on the cutting room floor?
Quite a few. This isn't always the case, but there were several that I felt really bad about leaving out. One is Mack Brown. Here's a national championship coach who comes back to UNC and within 2 years has them playing in a New Year's Six Bowl, which North Carolina hadn't done before, in recruiting. There's no question he had done a great job in his first 2 years back, but again, it's just 2 years. You have to go back a decade before that, and when I'm talking about recent performance, so I figured I should try to give it another year. Mark Stoops dropped off of my list. He was on there the 2 years before that. They obviously had a rough year last year, and I don't like to overreact so much to one season like that, but you know, if you're going to put him in, who are you going to leave out instead? I certainly thought Tom Allen, coming off the run the last couple of years at Indiana, he's my number 25, and I certainly thought he belonged on that list.
And I want to get to the top 10 for a second, Stuart, because you have Saban, Dabo. I don't think there's really much debate after that. We've talked a lot about Brian Kelly. You mentioned Lincoln and Day. But after that, you have all these SEC coaches compressed together. How do you differentiate between Ed Orgeron, who last year you had in the top three or four, Jimbo Fisher, Kirby Smart, who has been one of the best coaches in the country, although sometimes you wouldn't know it listening to the outlier fan. How do you figure those? And Dan Mullen, of course.
It was tough. And first of all, coincidence that they all four of those ended up all right next to each other. Orgeron is only a year removed from what we all said at the time was the greatest college football season the team has ever had. So it was hard to – you knew he was going to be ranked fairly high. But then, of course, last year, not only did they slip back, it was just a lot of it was totally on Orgeron. Sometimes it's not the coach's fault. Last year was definitely the coach's fault in terms of a disastrous defensive coordinator hiring, some things he did in the summer that really alienated his own locker room. So I knew I was going to drop him. In terms of how far I'm going to drop him, I thought that was – you know, right above Mullen, who is not a national championship coach, seemed like the logical floor there for how far he would drop. You could, you know, whether it should be Jimbo 7 and Ogeron 8 or Ogeron 7 and Jimbo 8, who knows? You know, you could go either way on that. But that was kind of my reasoning there.
A fantastic read in The Athletic by Stuart Mandel. Stuart, thanks for coming on. It's always great to hear from you, and we have had quite a bit to chew on thanks to your list. Be well. Come back soon.
All right. Thanks, Paul.
You got it. Stuart Mandel joining us, and we will take a break. We've had Moses Moody on, Stuart. We've talked about so many different things, including Greg McElroy at the draft, not at the draft, but at the pro day today at Alabama. Your phone calls the rest of the way at 855-242-7285.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
We welcome you back. Great to have all of you here. And Fred is up next in Memphis. So hello, Fred.
Hey, Paul. How are you today?
We are doing great. Thank you, Fred.
Listen, before I give you some more tips on learning to grow old,
okay.
Let me compliment you on your interview with Nolan Richardson a few days ago.
Oh, thank you.
I'm kind of curious as to why you didn't ask him what his role was in the Glory Road movie.
Yeah, you know,
sure you remember.
It's interesting. I was talking to him, Fred, I began to wonder exactly what his role was myself. I agree. I was confused about his years there. I thought he was there for that game. And then
he was.
Okay, well, then I should have asked him. I was a little bit uncertain at the last second.
Well, it was now maybe you can tell me who played the role as the actor for Adolph Rupp.
I don't remember.
In that movie. Well, he's an old-time actor, and John Vaught, does that remember?
John Vaught? Oh, yeah. I mean, he's a famous actor.
The actor. Uh-huh. And then, of course, I don't know if you remember the name Red West.
Who was a running
buddy with Elvis Presley.
Of course I remember what Red West, sure.
He played, had several roles. He played in Roadhouse, and he was also the bus driver for the West Texas State Miners.
I didn't realize that.
Road.
Yeah, Fred, not to bore you with Memphis stories, but my next door neighbor growing up, not growing up, but when I was like an infant, was part of the Elvis Mafia. And I knew the names of all those guys because Red West, he was, you know, there were like six or seven guys who were Elvis's protectors, and he was one of them. So I got a pretty good education as a 5-year old who was part of Elvis's team.
Yeah. How about the name Buzzy Forbus?
I don't know that name.
Yeah, he was a very close friend of Elvis, and any time they would have specials here in Memphis, Buzzy would go on and give a little feedback about their days. But back to the movie Glory Road, when Red West played the role of the bus driver, of course, I was playing golf, and I played golf with him.
Really?
And I asked him just how authentic was the movie Glory Road. And he said, of course, they had the film from the games in 66 from West Texas State Miners, and then of course the Kentucky Wildcats, which at that time was Pat Riley, Larry Connolly, Louis Dampier, and those boys. And of course I was living in Arkansas at the time, and I was an old high school basketball and football official, and the movie Glory Road was right down my alley. And, of course, I was heartbroken when my Wildcats lost in a historical movie. But Red West said, yes, it was very authentic because Pat Riley, Larry Kahn, and Louis Dampier came to the movie set. And, of course, they were filming the movie. And they also went into the dressing room of the West Texas State Miners and congratulated them on the win.
So, oh, wow.
Maybe appropriate history for this time of year for these people that love their basketball, and I don't think anyone loves it any more than I do. So
no, that's such a famous story, and for those who don't know, it's about an all-white Kentucky team playing Texas Western, coached by Don Haskins, which were all of their starters African American. I'm trying to remember. I think they were.
Well, for that particular game, he started five African Americans, but there were some white boys like myself on the team at the time. But for history, that's the way the game started, and that's the way the game ended. And of course, it's pretty historical coming about in 1966. And to cap it off, after I didn't go on to college to play college ball, I became pretty good friends with Adolph Rupp, being an official, and I sent some names to him on some prospects in high school. And I met him at Ole Miss when the 1966 team played Ole Miss in Oxford. And, of course, we were putting pretty good whipping on him. And as he walked off the floor, the student body started counting steps. And he stopped and turned and said, "You students better behave yourself or I'll turn a football team loose on you." But the caption for that was, that fall, Ole Miss, ranked in the top 10, had played the Kentucky Wildcats in Lexington. And Larry Seipel had faked a punt fourth and 41 and ran it for a touchdown and beat the Ole Miss Rebels. So that's,
hey, Fred, were you in Memphis in the early 70s when because I remember Coach Rupp, I met him once. He was the president of the ABA team there.
Right, right, yes. And I was a basketball junkie at that time. I came to Memphis from Kentucky in 1960.
Okay.
Driving a 1953 Buick Super. And got my first company car in 1960, and then I retired in 94. But, yeah, I was a junkie for basketball. Most all sports, as a matter of fact, I can call you back during the football season and quiz you on some football players back in the old days. You might want to go ahead and research.
I will.
Running back from Alabama, Gordon Pettis.
Oh, my goodness. I knew Gordon was the head of the officiating with the SEC when I got to town.
He was a supervisor over the SEC football officials. And he was also a high school teammate of Bobby Bowden.
I didn't know that. Wow, that's amazing. No, I knew Gordon really well.
Yeah. Oh, I got to know him through golf in my latter years, and he passed away a number of years ago of a heart attack. But did he have some stories to tell about the college football times back then? And Tommy Lewis, does that name ring a bell?
I am proud to say not only did I know Tommy, he was really a close friend. I got to know him extremely well, and what are the nicest men I've ever met.
I met him too through golf down on the Gulf Coast, and of course you know his history of obtaining his reputation as coming off the sideline and tackling Dickie Mago with Texas Christian to prevent a touchdown. And I asked Tommy, I said, "Tommy, what prompted you to do that?" I said, "I just couldn't let him score." So he came off the sideline without a helmet and tackled Dickie Mago. I think it was a 1958 Cotton Bowl.
It may have been a little earlier than that. But
Could have been.
Yeah, I'll tell you this, and I need to go, because I was in Huntsville, Alabama one night at a quarterback club speaking, and he was in the audience, and I didn't know him at the time. I was a young, arrogant, well, some would say that's an oxymoron. I made light of what had happened in the Cotton Bowl, and all of a sudden I looked over and everybody was like frowning.
There's Tommy.
And I went up to him afterwards to apologize, and he was embarrassed because I was embarrassed, and we began to be really good friends. I would come back there every year and speak, and we would talk quite a bit, and he was just an amazing man. Knew him really well. Thanks for the call, Fred. We need to keep talking. I need to see you one of these days and head to Memphis and hear about some of these stories. We're heading to a break. More to come. More of your phone calls right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Welcome back. Great to have you here. Final 30 minutes of our program on a Tuesday, and John is up next. Hey, John.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free, no insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/paul. That's hims.com/paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
John, you there? I don't hear John, so I will try Logan. Logan, can you hear me?
Yes, sir. How are you doing?
I am doing great. Thank you.
Excellent. I just had a few things to say, a couple topics I wanted to talk about today with you, Paul. First of all, great show as usual. It's always a great show when Greg McElroy is on the program. But I wanted to also thank you for the interview on the LSU football program. I've been following that pretty closely, and I think – I don't know. All these guys are getting fired at other colleges, but LSU is just kind of sitting there mum. So I think something's really going to go down. If those allegations are true, I just don't see how they can get away with that without some heads rolling. But, you know, it's one thing for the allegations, and I don't know if the NCAA is really investigating it. I don't really know. We really don't know what's going on. I mean, maybe you have a little bit more idea on what's going on in that than I do.
I don't. And, you know, you have a couple of things that we know about. Yeah, there was the NCAA football investigation, which I never thought was all that serious, that occurred primarily as a result of who was it? Was it Odell Beckham? I'm trying to remember if that was the player or not that handed out money, and they said it was counterfeit, and it really was. LSU self-imposed a bowl ban. I don't think that was a big deal. They weren't really in a great position anyway. I think the basketball investigation is more serious. It's gone on for so long, the average person has lost interest, and I don't know where that will end up. I think the most serious situation is what's going on with the investigation into sexual misconduct on campus. To me, that's I don't really understand the reaction from the university on that. I know they are being very circumspect in terms of, you know, they gave two suspensions for two people, and that was the extent of it. And you look around, and there are firings at Kansas, and now a firing of a president at Oregon State. It makes you wonder.
It does. I mean, I'm surprised they didn't take – I guess they're just trying to stay mum and hope that it blows over, but I just can't see how that's going to happen.
Well, Logan, right now you have two entities who are pursuing it in a very aggressive manner. That's USA Today, who started it, and then the reporter we had on earlier, Andrea Gallo, and her colleague, Brooks Cabina. But other than that, I don't hear much outrage from down there, do you?
I don't. That's what's surprising. But, I mean, they can't really – they're only going to be able to push it down the road for so long before something has to come out. There's got to be something.
Well, I don't know really what else is going to come out because, you know, this investigation by the independent law firm, it was pretty thorough. There's always something that could – I mean, you know, let me talk about the Deshaun Watson case for a second. It started with one or two, and now it's up to 14. Now, you can draw your own conclusions on that, but a lot of times stories will continue and grow at a very large pace once it gets out in the public. I don't know where USA Today is. I don't know where the local newspaper is. I know one thing about both organizations. They're not done yet.
Oh, I guarantee you that. I mean, they're on to that. So I do appreciate it. But if I want to talk about something a little bit lighter, Paul, that's kind of heavy stuff. The top 25 coaches, I personally think Ogeron and Mullen are overrated. And I think Cristobal, Freeze, and Kiffin were probably underrated there. So I just wanted to get your opinion on that.
Yeah, I think the SEC coaches, I mean, I would have Kirby Smart higher than he is, and Jimbo higher. Mullen, and I'm not sure. I thought Ogeron had a pretty bad year. And why did he have a bad year? Because he made two critical mistakes, Logan.
Right.
He made a disastrous hire for defensive coordinator, and then he let his team down in the preseason with his insensitivity. And those two mistakes cost LSU a lot last year.
Yeah, I mean, all the goodwill he had from the year before, I mean, he did a lot to erase that, I thought. And so, that's part of being a coach. You have to be able to relate to your players. It's not just about recruiting. I mean, LSU is always going to recruit well. But, you know, what is he going to do, you know, to grow those players? And I think that's why.
Well, Logan, a couple of years ago, I think it was Daboll, I was wondering about Saban's offensive coordinator hire, and he ended up winning a national championship. So, you never know, but but you did know in Ogeron's case, he tried to recreate the past, which is a bad idea.
Right.
And it was a disaster, and we still don't know whether he has recovered from it. And yeah, I agree. I thought Stewart was pretty kind to Ogeron.
I thought so too. I thought that was a little bit high, but Paul, I could talk to you all day. I just want to say I was really impressed by the Tide, especially yesterday. I got a little scared putting me on Saturday, but overall, I think we got a good route to get to the Final Four. So
I
want to let some other callers get on, but.
Hey, good to hear from you, Logan. Call again. Raymond is up next. Hey, Raymond.
Hey, Paul. How you doing?
We are doing well. Thank you.
Enjoy the show. Just got a couple comments on things, you know, about the poll, which I'm a long time bleed crimson red, you know. Pointing out, you know, Coach Drinkwitz from Missouri talking about how hard of a season it was this year, not knowing, you know, what to expect. I mean, you know, just to talk about Nick Saban, how good a coach he would really have to be to pull a team and his players together through this, you know, and to overcome. You know, you even had entire conferences, you know, opting out of the season.
Yeah, Raymond, I thought Saban alluded to it today, but I thought he won the national championship in March last year while some coaches were going home and really in a free fall trying to figure out what to watch on Netflix with their kids. He was hunkering down and coming up with a plan, and his message to his team was, who handles the controversy, not the controversy, but the pandemic the best? And we know who did.
Yes, sir. I agree with you 100%. You know, a couple of months back, you know, there was Brent Schrotenberger from USA.
Oh, yeah. Today, I remember
you know,
that.
He was complaining about saying that Nick Saban needed to be toppled, you know, the Bama program needed to be brought down for the good of this, you know, football program in the nations, you know, and complaining about California players leaving and coming out here to SEC schools. Well, that's the whole point of having, you know, a football program that you want to be number one in everything, you know, but, I usually don't keep up with basketball that much, but this year, for some reason, I listened to the ladies, you know, and the men's basketball. I'm proud they're doing good.
Well, you're right. Raymond, I hate to run. We're close on a break here, but you picked a good year to start following basketball in Alabama. We are heading to the break. More to come. A few minutes to go. Been a busy show. Moses Moody and Andrea Gallo. McElroy joined us. We've had a good time, and we will close it out.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.